T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Yeah, Michael's back. Michael's back, y'all. Oh, you know I love this hour. This is my favorite hour out of the four. Every Sunday night, we call it Mom and Michael Hour. That's right, the Mom and Michael Hour. And my son, Michael Battle, is joining us all the way from Los Angeles. He has a BA degree in television and film production, and it is such a pleasure to have you back on, son. How you be?
I'm fantastic and good to be on.
It's great to have you. I'm doing great. I was, you know, kind of peeking at one of our monitors tonight because they had the Country Music Awards. Is that what was on, Shaletta? I think that's what it was. And then they also had on another screen the Kirk Franklin show, Sunday's Best.
Oh, yeah, which we've talked about before.
Yeah, yeah.
His show.
Yeah, and of course, you know, I was watching it and you never... I don't know what to think of that show, Michael. I don't. There's a part of me that's really happy that it exists. But then there's another part of me that I keep hearing from my childhood. You know, it gets in, you know, engraved in your brain. And I keep thinking, a Christian or gospel artist, does it matter if you don't live what you sing about? I'm not kidding you.
You know, I think the real question is not so much, does it matter? If you live what you sing about. But who can actually make that judgment? Because you can say, oh, well, this person sang a gospel song and they don't live that way. Case in point, Whitney Houston has had some hit gospel songs in her career, a few here and there. Mm-hmm. And there are other R&B or pop stars that have had the same thing. And we all know the trouble that Whitney Houston has had in the past. But if they're singing Christian music at the core of Christianity is not judging. You wouldn't know that from Republicans, but the core of it is not being the one to judge. So it's kind of hard. So let's say someone does have a lifestyle that doesn't seem to fit with one person's iteration of a Christian lifestyle or Christian morals, but they're singing gospel music. Are they not still doing a service for Christian people and Christian belief? Are they not still doing good work? It seems unfair to point the finger and go, oh, well, you do X, Y, and Z, therefore you can't sing this style of music.
You know, that's an interesting perspective. There is no other genre of music I can think of where the artist is judged as much as in Christian gospel music, right?
Hmm.
I you know, you walk out, and if you've got tattoos and piercings all in your tongue, they're thinking, wow, you're a wild child. What are you doing?
Right.
Right? I don't know what to do with that.
To be fair, yes, in most cases that is true. But there is Christian music of every kind. I've heard Christian death metal, Christian techno, Christian rock, like hard rock, Christian hip-hop, Christian rap. Whatever you can think of, I'm sure there's Christian trap music. There's every style of music out there that's normally associated to a different style. Artists have taken those stylings and use it to spread Christian messages.
Then do you feel as though it doesn't matter then? It doesn't matter who's singing the song or if they're living the life they're singing about?
I think it matters what you get from the song. I mean, there are songs that aren't even technically Christian, but they're sang by artists who used to do Christian music or, in other cases, were raised in the church, that kind of have the same sort of uplifting sentiments of a Christian song, but actually aren't, that I sometimes listen to and derive the same sort of uplifting inspiration from. There's this song on the new live version of The Wiz that was televised, I believe, on NBC.
Right.
Called We Got It. And the artist who wrote it is an R&B singer and producer. And the chords, the way the song is structured, is very classically in the modern Christian stylings. And it's a motivational song. It's about Dorothy talking to the lion and the tin man and the scarecrow saying, we got this. you know, and it's going to be tough. I didn't say it was going to be easy, but we're going to persevere through it together. That is a watered-down version of an old work song back in slavery times. I mean,
right.
That message, that core, is missing the words God, Savior, Promised Land, but it's the same core that got black people through a lot of very hard times. And, of course, The Wiz is the African-American version of The Wizard of Oz.
Right.
So that this song had Christian stylings, that messaging, it was sang by a cast of black people, it was no mistake. That's exactly what it was supposed to do. It was supposed to tell young people watching The Wiz on TV, seeing these black and brown faces, hey, you too can persevere through what you're going through. So I felt like, to me, that was a Christian song. It was uplifting. It was positive. It was inspirational. But Neo, the artist who wrote the song, who's a singer and a major producer, who was first an R&B singer and songwriter before he became an artist, has written tons of songs about his girl this and what he's going to do to that girl. And, you know, he's done many things that the most conservative Christians might not think would fit someone in the Christian stylings.
Mm-hmm. You know, what's interesting is, you know, as you're saying that, it makes me think about what's happening with Katy Perry right now with the suit against her for the song Dark Horse, where she ripped off a gospel rapper. Did you hear about
mm-hmm.
that?
I heard that there was a lawsuit, but I haven't read the details of who was involved and why exactly they feel like it was ripped off.
Well, this article is from about 6 days ago. It says Katy Perry is on vacation in Spain, but news from America is not good for the singer as a jury found her liable of plagiarizing her hit, Dark Horse. A jury on Monday found that the pop star stole the underlying beat for her 2013 song that earned her a Grammy nomination. She also performed Dark Horse at the Super Bowl in 2015. And Christian hip-hop artist Marcus Gray, who goes by Flame, he sued Perry for copyright infringement because he said the beat to Dark Horse sounded like his 2008 single, Joyful Noise. So Gray's attorneys argued that the beat and instrumental line featured through nearly half of Dark Horse stolen from Joyful Noise. This is reminiscent of that Pharrell tune.
yeah, exactly.
You know?
So Katy Perry actually is a great example. I was thinking of her when you first brought this up. She, I heard, initially tried to start her career as a Christian artist.
Absolutely.
Her father was a pastor.
Yeah, I think she did that song, I Kissed a Girl and I Liked It or something.
Yeah, that was one of her early hits.
Yeah.
You know, and so she came from those roots, again, had a father for a pastor, obviously knows that musical world. I wouldn't be surprised if she did hear that song and then use that in some regard. I don't know. But I will say her song Firework, which is a massive hit. What was that? Four years ago?
It was bigger. Yeah, it was longer than that.
I love that song.
Me too.
Huge hit. If you really listen to it, it sounds like a modern Christian pop song. And again, not Southern gospel so much as the Christian pop that got popular in the early 90s.
Actually, with mega churches, that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It sounds like that. The chords are very much like that. And again, the messaging is missing the words God and Jesus and the other words that would hearken one to note that that was a Christian song. But the messaging is very much the same.
It's so it's more inspirational is what you're saying.
It's inspirational. It's saying you have value no matter who you are.
Right.
And let your inner firework, sorry, your inner energy shine and be a firework, make them go, wow. And that's what they teach in churches. They say, this little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. They always say, let your light shine.
Right.
So that's a great example of someone who was writing music that functions closely to that of Christian music, but isn't labeled as such.
Okay, then let's talk about R. Kelly, who wrote I Believe I Can Fly. No, seriously, because this discussion came up recently with someone I know and love. And I have to tell you, Michael, the argument was very interesting, where you look at R. Kelly, who, you know, has been abusing young girls, really, for years and, you know, now is getting his comeuppance. And he's written songs like I Believe I Can Fly.
Which admittedly was written for a basketball movie. But, yes, of course, has been interpreted as an inspirational song forever
yes.
and ever. Amen.
Yes. But, I mean, you know, now that we know who he is, songs like You Remind Me of My Jeep or, you know, Age Ain't Nothing But a Number, as your cousin Jasmine reminded me of, you
mm-hmm.
know, that it makes you think differently of him, right? You know that what he's guilty of. But do we continue to listen to I Believe I Can Fly? You know, I was just at a big event with all these children for this summer camp called Freedom School that was happening at a school over in North St. Paul. And your aunt put together a program with a whole lot of other people. And these children threw down. They were fantastic, Michael. And in that song, they ended that show with Heal the World.
Yeah.
And I was excited because the whole show was just so beautiful. They worked so hard and did a beautiful job. At the same time, I started looking around going, oh, who's thinking about Michael Jackson right now, right?
Yeah.
So you can have all of these amazing songs. I mean, you can go, you know, a couple of hundred years ago and look at some of the songs that Beethoven wrote or some of the crazy people that wrote some of those songs. And you don't talk about that today. These, or, you know, symphony orchestras are playing this music all the time. But currently, we are living through it. Where some of these musicians are getting hit hard, and does their music take a hit? Absolutely.
It takes a hit, but kind of to what you just mentioned there with the classical music. I mean, Wagner is one of the greatest classical composers ever, and he's a known Nazi sympathizer. So it's always complicated to watch the Ring cycle, to listen to his operas, which are extraordinary, and to learn about them. As I am a novice opera fan, I've been a classical band for years, and to listen to it and go, wow, this is amazing, and I'm moved by this, and it's great, but man, the person that wrote it. So that's, I think, a much grander conversation about when do the actions or lack of ethics or moral of the artist outlive or fall short of the art itself. Like, are those two ever separated? Can you ever enjoy the music as it is? But Michael Jackson, again, a great example of someone whose music, it's, you kind of can't deny that many decades of excellence, despite what's been revealed about him as of late. It is what it is, and it's terrible, and it's conflicting, and you and I have spoken about it before, but it doesn't erase the music. The artistry is still there.
Yeah, but it's our living history. We're living through this, and so why not just silence the song for a minute?
You can, but then you have a group of kids who are setting a positive example for their peers, who put all this work into a wonderful concert and are ending the show with this positive, uplifting, to use our earlier word, inspirational song. Are they wrong for using that art for good?
Good point. I'm not going to argue with you anymore. I think you won.
Well, it's not an argument. I think it's a really good question, and one that I surely do not have the answer to. I think it's an ongoing conversation within each of us.
Well, I asked the question because I'm sitting here looking at Sunday's Best, and I know you really enjoy that show, and so many others do.
Wait. I don't actually watch that show ever. I mean, I've
never
nothing against
ever.
It.
I thought that you. Oh. Mm.
I think I've seen two episodes ever. I'm aware of the show, but I don't normally watch it.
Well, first of all, Kirk Franklin's attire is stellar.
Really?
Yeah, he looks great. It's amazing. But I have to tell you, there's a weirdness about it for me. But I do wish it success because I know the message that they're delivering is really powerful. So I guess what I'm trying to say is our gifts and talents can be used no matter how great we are or how awful we are, that your gifts and talents can still move people to do better. And that's quite shocking. But when it's your living history, when you're in the midst of it and you hear that song, you just start going, oh, no, turn it off.
Well, I have a question for you then on your personal journey. How did you handle or what comments were made to you when you were singing both gospel and singing with Prince?
I actually had a death threat.
Wow.
Yeah, I actually came out of an event at a college here in town. I won't say it. And it was advertised that I would be there, and I come out in my car. I had a death threat on it. Someone put it on my windshield and told me that God, that I was going to hell because I had decided to not only sing gospel music, but to also sing inspirational pop music, you know, secular music, as long as it was, you know, uplifting, that I'm not singing something nasty, you know. So that was what I chose to do, and they didn't like it, and they told me, you know, that God has put you here to sing certain songs, and how dare you, and you're going to die and burn in hell, and somebody should come kill you, and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So people really do take their faith very seriously, and they figure if you're on the bandwagon, you know, this is in my own personal experience, if you're on the bandwagon, you know, if you're on that wagon with them, then you're accepted. But you get off of that and say, well, I want to go. Why do I have to preach to the choir every time I sing? You already know. Why can't I go out among the people who may not know?
But it's interesting because you never left the bandwagon. I think even when you were singing songs that were more, you know, edgy, or that were edgier, rather, your faith didn't change. Who you were at your core didn't change. You were the same person. You were just building your career.
Right.
So it kind of goes back to my original idea of who are we to point the finger and go, well, you've done something wrong, because we don't know what the core of that person is and what's driving them to make these choices.
Yeah, if it's only that simple. Well, I hope that it's that simple, Michael. I hope that people can look past what they know about a person, because, you know, people confess their sins all the time. They'll come right out and go, hey, I'm doing this, and I need to get away from that, you know, so pray for me. People will say that, and then there are those who will judge you no matter what you say. Even if you're trying to get better, they will judge you. So I look at what's happening to, you know, some of these artists, and that horrible monster in Hollywood that finally went down. What's his name? The producer.
Yeah, oh, Harvey
Weinstein and you know, and Bill Cosby and so many others. You know, some people will look back. The Cosby Show is still playing, and people will look at it and go, okay, I have to forget that what he did. I have to forgive him. And
well,
forget
you can't
it.
Forget.
You can't. Well, you can. They say, you know, they say you can. I don't know that.
I think it changes the lens with which we view the Cosby Show. But I think what I hope that person is trying to say is, we shift the lens, but still appreciate the good that that show did at the time it was as popular as it was.
Right. So no matter what you do in life, hopefully there's room for your gifts. If those gifts are uplifting people, changing their lives, and transforming them and making them better.
Yeah, hopefully.
You agree?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
All right. We're going to take a break. That's my son, Michael Battle. We'll be back in a moment. It is now 10:26 here at WCCO. This is the Mom and Michael Hour, and I do hope that you are finding joy and happiness. Of course, happiness is fleeting, but I do hope that you will find joy in your life as the weather clears up. It gets so beautiful. We're going to see some thunderstorms later on tonight, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But let me wrap up with Michael this first half hour. Michael, you had a chance to move recently, and I know that whole process is just, it's painful. At least for me, it has been painful every time.
You know, it wasn't that painful. We had a great moving team out here in California. And we had three people come and move our place, and they did a fantastic job. We got them coffee and snacks and drinks and lunch and tipped them well, because we kind of felt bad. It was a lot of stuff. There was storage involved. It was heavy. And I think when you see three movers come in and they see two able-bodied men, in my case, very tall, and we're not touching a thing, I just feel guilty.
Right.
I'm like, my back hurts. It's a thing. And it really is. I don't want to re-injure myself from my injury a year ago. So that's why we hired movers.
Really? Are you kidding me? I feel no pain. None. I'm so grateful for what they do. You know, because I have a lot of heavy, well, three pieces that are really heavy. And I need to get rid of all three of them, because I'd have to move into an older home, like from the 20s and 30s, in order for that house, all the way up to the 50s, in order for that house to be strong enough to handle this furniture.
You do.
Yeah.
But in this case, I don't know. I just feel like people see me, I'm almost 6'3", my arms are pretty big, and they assume, like, well, you should be helping. And maybe I'm just projecting that thought into their mind.
I'm sorry, you didn't write a check? Nobody wrote a check?
Oh, there was, check, tip, food, everything. Our guilt was spilling forth. It was very clear that we were trying to
make it. You actually felt guilty. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's remarkable, considering that they, you know, I mean, like here, it's called Two Men in a Truck. So if you don't get that you're movers, I mean, I don't.
No, I mean, they're movers. We hired them. They did a great job. I don't know. I think it's just, I'm used to pitching in. And you know what it is? When I used to do magic shows in the Twin Cities back in the day, I had all these cases and illusions. And even when I had assistants, even though I had just performed on stage or if I was loading in, I'm going to carry my own illusion boxes and heavy stuff to the car. I would load the car. I would help set up the show. I'm just used to kind of that performance environment where even if you're front and center, you're still involved in the heavy lifting because you're part of the same team. It just, I'm not used to saying, okay, move this and point there and watching people work without helping them work.
I was your roadie. What are you talking about?
Yes, for you. We
how many boxes did you put up? I can tell you. How many batteries did you need? I can tell you.
Yes, well, but that's
do you really want to bring this up? Because it's a sore spot for your mother.
But I did lift the heavy stuff. That's my point. I don't mean to fall back.
I help with that.
You did, but yeah. I did too. I'm used to everyone there pitching in and the manual labor.
Let me tell you something. When I realized that I was never going to fit in the box, I was so done. You have no idea how done I was. You were about to perform, and I just said, this is the last performance. I haven't been on that stage with you or been your roadie since.
Yep.
That's not true. That's not true. With the Steel Show, man. Come on.
But you haven't been my roadie for the Steel Show. You're the star of that show. I'm privileged to be in it. You've just helped me pick up some things when I'm out of town, which is different.
Okay. Hey, Michael, we have to take a break. I'm going to let that process in my brain. And when I come back, I'll be screaming. All right. Well, you're listening to the Mom and Michael Hour. We'll be back in a moment. It is a dirty work in Hollywood, but I tell you, my son absolutely loves it, and I'm starting to like it a lot. So, Michael Battle, welcome back, honey.
Thank you so much.
The movies, man, there's only one new movie in the top 10, and it's been a long time since there's only been one movie, if I recollect correctly. Fast and Furious presents Hobbs and Shaw. It beat out The Lion King this week. The Lion King made $38 million, but Fast and Furious domestically made $60.8 million. I thought that was impressive. Did you?
It is impressive, especially for a film coming out in August. So question for you, which I'm going to assume the answer to this question is zero, but how many of the Fast and Furious franchise films have you seen? There are nine, by the way.
There are nine?
The first one came out in 2001.
There are nine? It's like, how many Rockies can you see? Rocky was 18 when he started. The last one, he's about 65. So there are nine?
2001, The Fast and Furious. 2006, The Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift. 2000, you know what? I'm sorry. This is not in order. Let me just get Fast and Furious, 2001. I'll go quick. 2003, Too Fast, Too Furious. 2006, The Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift. Actually, a film that I auditioned for back when I was an actor, which is a whole other story. And then, of course, 2009, Fast and Furious, not to be confused with The Fast and Furious. It's Fast Furious, 2009. 2011, Fast Five. Of course, there were then five of them. 2013, Fast and Furious Six. 2015, Furious Seven, which is just a hilarious title. 2017, the most recent one before this weekend, The Fate of the Furious. And, of course, this weekend, Fast and Furious presents Hobbs and Shaw, which is actually a spinoff from the main Fast and Furious franchise, featuring just the Hobbs and Shaw characters that I don't think Hobbs and Shaw appeared in the franchise until Fast and Furious 6 or 7. So they're more recent additions to the base characters and now have their own spinoff. But, of course, the spinoff is produced by the two lead actors, Jason Statham and The Rock. So smart of them to go ahead and produce their own spinoff, which I'm sure we're going to see a sequel to quite soon.
So that's how Dwayne lost his hair.
Making money? I mean, if that's all it takes, I'm bald. Where am I going?
Because
the man makes like $30 million per movie. He does at least three films per year. You can do the math from there. That doesn't include any of his other ancillary opportunities, appearances, etc. So, yeah, he's making huge dollars. He's the biggest star in Hollywood right now in terms of payment per film. He's huge. He's a big deal.
But like you said, he's one of the producers.
One of the producers on this one, again, they could have been tossed an EP credit, as we call it, an executive producer credit on this film, just because it was tied to them, the success of the film is tied to them being in it. And so that I'm not sure the terms of the deal, if it was their idea, where this came from, if he actually was involved in the story, if he was involved in the cast. I have no idea how involved these two leads were, or if it was just purely contractual to bump up their pay.
Well, this is the first time they actually produced the show, so the movie. That's a big deal.
It's a big deal. I'm not sure if it's the first time that he has produced a film himself, but in this particular franchise, yeah, I think it's the first time that they might be credited. So Fast and Furious presents Hobbs and Shaw, as you mentioned, open with $60,800,000. It's a strong opening for August. It's in line with what the studios were expecting. They spent $200 million making this movie, which may seem like a lot, but if you've seen any of the Fast and Furious films, that is expected because the scale of these films gets bigger and more ridiculous with each film. There should be cars jumping off of buildings, huge explosions, people basically doing stunts in the air with cars and planes, cars going out of planes, cars jumping into planes, a helicopter going into a plane that then goes into a car. Scientifically impossible things that these teams put together, all while driving cars that are worth over $1 million.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If somebody jumps off a building and all of a sudden, you know, wings come out of their back made out of Ferrari doors, that'd be cool.
Oh, but it's not even that clever. It's someone drives a car off of a cliff that then lands an aircraft carrier, or rather an airplane, or they drive the cars out of an airplane and the cars have parachutes on them and then land on a road to go have a heist, or rather enact a heist on some remote station. It's that kind of craziness. And it sounds stupid. It is stupid. And this franchise initially was terribly the male eye through the lens was pervasive throughout. There were lots of midriffs and girls in bikinis with their butts on screen. It was all about tough dudes and pretty women and them trying to impress these women. But boy, has this franchise evolved over time. They have not let go of the roots of being made for teenage boys, but they have truly taken on the circa 2016 and forward, actually 2008 really, but the new times where you can't make a big movie without having women as they really are, which is intelligent, strong, and able to solve problems without being saved by some man.
Yeah. By the way, you know, one of the women in this piece is Helen Mirren.
Yeah, not her first appearance. She was a surprise reveal, I think, two movies ago as the mother of one of the characters, which in case you want to pull an Avengers promise and promise to watch all of these from the first one forward, I'll hold back the spoiler as to who she is. But she has been in a few of these already because I think, like The Rock, she probably likes money. And so she signs up to be...
Do you really think they only do it for the money, or do you think that the script really does need them in it and they make a difference?
Money.
Okay.
No. These movies are never about the script. There's two core messages, or themes rather, in this franchise. Cars and family. And that is the through line from 2001 to now. It's characters who love their cars and they'll commit crimes with their cars for good in the end. And they're always going to do it for family. Whether that's chosen family, blood family, family is what makes it all worth it. It's what everyone, good and bad, is fighting for in these films. That said, these films have always been a blast. From the first time I saw the first one in theaters at Harmar Mall when I was in high school with my friend Eric, and then unfortunately Eric was driving that night, and then when we left, he thought he could drive like them, and I was just petrified in the front seat as he peeled out of the parking lot at night. I was like, we can't do that. That's different. it was a very scary night. Teenage boys.
That's your best friend. I love me some Eric.
Yeah. You can say, well, if they can do it on screen, we can do it.
It's like your brother.
In the car trying to kill us. So I've seen them all in theaters. They're a blast. They're big explosions, big stunts, big characters. They're so much fun. You never go into one of these films expecting a well-written script or a complicated plot. You want bigger and bigger stunts with big stars and big names. And all of that to say that Hobbs and Shaw delivers. Even though these two characters are newer, even though these two characters aren't the beloved car thieves that have become so popular in the main multi-billion dollar worldwide franchise, billion with a B, people don't realize the Fast and the Furious. Some of their movies are some of the biggest worldwide movies ever. In fact, they're one of the few entries in the top 10 all time that are not a Disney-owned property. So this is a mega, mega franchise. So Hobbs & Shaw adds that it's not opening to the same numbers as the other ones, but it delivers. I had a blast. It's over 2 hours long. I didn't mind that. The characters are fun. Their relationship on screen is fun to watch. How they, of course, despise each other but then have to learn to work together is expected and wonderful in all the ways that it should be. And when the sequel comes out, whether it's the next Fast and Furious film and or the next Hobbs and Shaw, I'll be there to see both of them opening weekend.
Okay, so the Hobbs and Shaw is kind of like Ant-Man and the Wasp, right? You know, they kind of took these two characters, removed them a little bit, and gave them their own show, gave them their own movie.
Kind of, except that Hobbs and Shaw were in the original films first, whereas Ant-Man and the Wasp were first introduced as separate characters and then added to the Avengers.
Oh, okay, okay. Say that. What did you say?
I wanted to ask you something, Michael, because this is what I heard. Word on the street is, Geraldine, that they did this Hobbs and Shaw movie because Vin Diesel and The Rock couldn't get along, but the studio movie company didn't want to lose any money, so they gave Hobbs and Shaw their own franchise to keep it going.
Ooh.
I don't believe that.
That's what I heard from a couple of movie critics here in town.
That seems like that's a possibility, but Vin Diesel has been producing so much content, he seems way too smart to let a feud get in the way of $30 million. We're talking billion-dollar massive payout. So if anything, if the studio let that story get out, it's probably because the studio wouldn't pay Vin Diesel as much as The Rock, even though Vin Diesel is the original protagonist of the Fast and Furious franchise. You can't have the Fast and Furious crew without Vin Diesel. But he didn't want to be in a movie where he made less money than The Rock, but The Rock won't take a pay cut since his pay rate is already higher than Vin Diesel's. It's probably that. It's probably the fault of Universal Studios, and my guess, and they probably put that stupid story out to blame on the actors, but it's really their fault.
Okay, so Idris Elba was added to this movie? He wasn't in any of the other Fast and Furious movies?
That's the part I have to go back and research. He actually was in an older one, per the storyline, but I have no recollection of
that. I'm looking at his body of work on Box Office Mojo, and I this is my third time going over it. Maybe Mom missed it, but I don't see
it. Maybe you didn't, because plot-wise, he's presented in this film as if we've seen him before, and so I had that same question to myself. It was, well, wait a minute, was he in the last one? Is the story that they're talking about actually, you know, a previous plot line in one of the films that I've seen? I'm not sure. In fact, that's referenced more than once in the movie where there's some character that we're supposed to know previously knew one of our lead characters. But I'm not sure which one it was. I'll have to look that up and see if it was. So, but if he wasn't, they sure played it off as if he was in this film, did a great job, and was a really strong villain in this film.
Okay, so, you know, he just got married this year.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think it was in April he married a woman he's been dating for a while. They got engaged, and they walked down the aisle. They did it, and a beautiful couple. And to know that he's still working the way he's working, man, it's got to be a trip being married to someone who's super famous. You know, whether it's Brad Pitt, which I've had a crush on him since, what is that show called, Louise? Thelma and Louise. There you go. Thank you, Shaletta. Thelma and Louise. I fell in love with Brad Pitt. You know, Denzel Washington, oh, my God. I think if I was in his presence, I'd just go, you know. So yeah. There are just certain actors, female and male, that you really have great respect for, and you can't wait to see them in a movie. And Idris being in this particular one, and after I saw the trailer, I was like, I have to go see this movie. And I don't ever want to see a big racing car movie like that. But I'm gonna.
Well, I gotta say, he is awesome in this movie. His motorcycle, who he is, his character, he's ultra strong. And, like, the way his bike moves and does, I mean, I won't give any spoilers. There's definitely a few wow moments. Because he's partly human and partly other things. And
you just gave that away, didn't you?
Well, that's in the trailer.
Oh, it is?
But
I saw the trailer. I don't remember saying that.
He's super strong. And his whole, everything he has on him, his bike, everything is just otherworldly. And so he makes for a strong villain. And, of course, he's such an amazing actor. He brings gravity to whatever he's doing, whether it's a villain here, whether it's to the Thor movies or the Avengers films. I don't know how he's going to ground Cats. I don't know if Idris can save that movie. Yeah. I do know that I'm going to see it opening weekend. Have you seen the trailer for Cats?
No. Talking about Cats as in C-A-T-S?
Cats, the musical, is going to be a film.
Yeah, I know this. I mean, you're asking me about Cats, the show I never want to see again?
Have you seen the trailer?
I've seen the trailer, and I ducked.
It felt like something was
coming at me. It was smelling bad, and I just thought, I can't. So I ducked.
It is very strange. I will say that trailer on a big screen in a higher definition doesn't look as weird. I think the lower res version we're seeing on our computer screens, the CGI isn't quite as clean. But when I saw it in theaters, I said, okay, that looks a bit better on the big screen in this version. I think Cats is either going to be one of the greatest box office bombs in history, or it's going to become one of the biggest Christmas releases ever and become a yearly classic that people want to watch around that time of year.
Really?
Out of those two,
which is it for you?
I don't know. I'm going to go see it opening weekend because I can't wait to see what it's going to be. But it might, there's a sliver of a chance that it might just be so weird that people love it. It might be so weird that it's magical.
Weird is an interesting choice of words.
Well, truly odd and strange, and we've never seen anything like it before. It's people in motion capture suits who have cat fur painted on them with CGI.
Right.
Incredible Oscar-winning actors, talent across the board, doing a movie about a play that has no plot.
Right.
So it's with incredible music. And so it's right in that spot where I saw the trailer, and I was terrified, but I was like, I have to go see it because it might just be so weird. It's wonderful. So odd. It's over the top. It might be the film we're talking about of the year.
Well, I smell something. So I'm going to take a break. And, we're not going to talk about Cats, the movie, anymore. We'll be back in just a moment. It is now 10:52 here at WCCO. It is 81 degrees outside. And as we wrap up the last minutes of the Mom and Michael Hour, Michael, I have to ask you, do you know who Gary Clark Jr. is?
Yes, I've heard of that artist. Real quick, I want to say Idris Elba was not in a previous Fast and Furious film. This is his first one, which is shocking. So he was very well integrated. But yes, Gary Clark Jr., singer, guitarist, I believe.
Yes.
They play his stuff on the radio out here on some of the indie stations I love, and he makes great music.
He does. The song "This Land Is Mine" blew my mind. I saw him perform it on Stephen Colbert, the Tonight Show. I also saw him being interviewed on the Trevor Noah Show, the Daily Show. And I was like, okay. And so Katia, our neighbor, she mm-hmm. asked me, are you going to go see this guy, Gary Clark, and he's going to be at Surly Brewing. Now, Surly Brewing, what is the first thing you think about when you hear that name, Surly?
Angry beer.
Yeah, well, there you go. But it's a mega place, man. It's huge. It's located at 520 Malcolm Avenue Southeast. And he's going to be there Friday, August 9th at 5:30 p.m. to 10 p.m., Gary Clark Jr. So it's big. It's going to be a huge, huge, huge event. And I'm just curious to know, is he going to sing all of his lyrics as he normally does? Or it's going to make some people uncomfortable from time to time, that's for sure.
It might, but he's a fantastic artist. And I'm not just saying that because I'm buddies with his talent manager. I knew of the artist before I ever met his manager, but I would go check him out. If you're a fan of great music of any kind, check the guy out. He's great.
Yeah, and First Avenue is presenting that along with Jam. And so they are this is happening, Gary Clark Jr. with someone named Jesse Wilson. So I bet this is going to be smoking. Wish I could go. $50 tickets, but man, it just sounds like it's going to be smoking. So we've got the artists, so many artists coming to town, Michael, that bring such great music. We have so many venues for them. It's just remarkable what's happening here in the Twin Cities, and I wish you would consider moving home, but I know that I can forget about that.
I mean, if they build Hollywood in the Twin Cities, I'll be there.
Exactly. Well, you'll be home soon, and I can't wait. Are you going to be on with me live next week?
That's the hope. If nothing changes, I'm looking forward to being in studio.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm not going to hold my breath on that one, that's for sure. Not going to hold my breath, son. If there was one thing you would want to say to me and those that are listening to uplift us with all that has happened this weekend, that's all that's happening for, you know, since 2016, what is the one thing you could say that would really inspire or at least uplift us?
That's a challenging question. You know, I was just at your favorite store, IKEA.
Hey, you know, come on now. They don't even have customer service.
I was just at IKEA, and I was talking to Joey, and we walked in, and we literally had a conversation where we said, okay, so what's the plan? Am I going to follow you? Are you going to follow me? Or if something happens, who's going to watch for the exits? What's the plan? And I've never had that conversation out loud. We've all thought it in our heads, but to really say it out loud to the person you're with, if something happens, what are we going to do to make sure that we can try to do something? And then behind that, knowing that there's not much you can do. And so things are changing here. And I don't know. I think it's pushing me, I'll personalize. I'm trying to enjoy each day more. I'm trying to be present more. I'm trying to not try to keep control of everything because I simply can't have control of all things. But I can be a good person. I can strive to be the best version of myself. So I do those things, accept my flaws, and say, hey, I saw the sunset, the sunrise, and accept that I'm alive today and be thankful for that. So I guess, in short, practice thankfulness more. Each day, know that we woke up. That's a blessing. Be thankful for that and all other things, good and bad, in your life.
Yeah, we are on the right side of the dirt. That is for sure, Michael. And just to have a little bit of humor in here, you and I have talked about Hollywood for a long time, but I did not understand that there is a TV series called Beyond the Pole until tonight. Just wanted you to know that.
Wait, Beyond the P-O-L-E?
Yeah.
You know, that could be two things. That could be what it sounds like, or it could be a show about the next election.
Ooh, no, that would be P-O-L-L. But
no, it was a play on words. It was
oh,
a joke.
See,
it was
a ha-ha. I didn't get the memo. I'm sorry. But it is what you think it is. Amazing, isn't it?
Well, now I'm intrigued. What does happen beyond
the pole? Oh, there's no time to talk about it. Ain't God good? I love you, son.
I love you, too.
Take care of yourself, okay?
All right, you too.
Be safe. Listen to that God voice. Well, that's my son, Michael Battle. And it's been a pleasure being on with you tonight. I'll see you next Sunday.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.